I'd like to call this regular council meeting to order. Would you all rise, please, for the invocation?
We meet to serve our community and endeavor to be worthy custodians of all that has been entrusted to us. Let us be concerned only for what will promote good government. May we bring to our council chamber minds that think and hearts that feel, so that in our deliberations we may display imagination, wisdom, and courage, and the will to do our work for the good of all.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present.
Correct me, Madam Clerk, if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's any addendum this evening. There is, though, one change to the agenda. Phil Smith, who was to appear as a delegate, has been caught in traffic, so he's not going to be able to address us with respect to the 12th annual Crystal Beach 5K, which takes place on October the 8th. That is a premier event. It's the best running event in Fort Erie, and it always has a great turnout. I think they're looking to try to get 1,000 runners out this year. So that's October the 8th. It's a Saturday, and if any of you are interested, go to the Crystal Beach 5K website. Lots of information there. There are no other announcements this evening. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? There being none, then I'll just make reference to the public notices that will appear on our agenda. One has to do with a town-initiated housekeeping amendment for the zoning bylaw. That will be held October the 3rd in the Town Hall Council Chambers. The report for that will be available September the 28th, 2016. There is a planning meeting, a public meeting for the draft plan of vacant land condominium revision of Dominion Woods, Inc. Again, October the 3rd, 6 p.m. in the Town Hall Council Chambers. And the report for that will be available Wednesday, September the 28th. Same evening, same time. Draft plan of subdivision and combined official plan and property rezoning revised for Royal Oak Property Developments Limited for the Royal Oak subdivision, and the report for that will be available Wednesday, September 28th, 2016, and a public information meeting with respect to the downtown parking strategy to address parking for new residential uses in various downtown areas. That is Tuesday, October the 11th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. in the Town Hall atrium. That takes us to the Regional Councilor's report. Good evening, Councilor Annunziata.
Good evening, Your Worship, members of council, and members in the audience. I'll be more brief this evening. Councilor Luber said, thank God.
We're all thinking that.
Everyone was thinking the same thing, but he's the only one that had the courage to say it, I guess. First off, I want to share with council the incredible opportunity I had last week to take part in the Verbatim Expo. Basically, it was about celebrating entrepreneurship and providing leadership for the next generation of new startups and entrepreneurs throughout Niagara. So a special thank you to Employment Professionals Canada for their title sponsor, as well as Canadian Motor Speedway for their program sponsorship. It was wonderful to see Councillor Butler there as well. I thought it was a wonderful event, and it was very well done. Earlier this afternoon, I took part in the NCO, which is the Niagara Community Observatory, sponsored through Brock University, and the issue was on downtown revitalization. It was a great session as far as how we move our communities forward with respect to different initiatives, public investment, seeking private investment as well. I look forward to sharing some of the discussion with this council. I did have the opportunity to speak to Acting President Brian Hutchings, and we discussed briefly the great news that Niagara has been shortlisted as a potential host site for the 2021 Canada Summer Games. If you recall, Niagara Regional Council committed $85,000 to have the Niagara Sport Commission develop a formal bid proposal. So we did that. We've been shortlisted, and we're excited about the next steps of the process. A little background on the Canada Games. They are expected to bring together 4,600 athletes, which is more than the Winter Olympics, and it's expected to draw at least 25,000 visitors. So the last time the Games were held in Ontario was in 2001. So Niagara did submit a proposal, but it was defeated at that time. So hopefully we'll be more successful this time around. So as one major capital project finishes, which is the Central Avenue Bridge, which at presently it's an investment of $15,762,900. The dedication ceremony is expected for the end of October, so I encourage the community, the downtown district BIA, and all residents to take part in the unveiling and the ribbon cutting of that wonderful piece of infrastructure. Just as one is finishing, one will be getting started. $18.6 million set aside to reconstruct Dominion Road from Burley to Buffalo Road. A portion of that is for underground water and wastewater infrastructure. So some great infrastructure projects going on in the town of Fort Erie. Causes some delays and some challenges, but overall it's a good thing. This past week, there was a staff report encouraging the region to help fund some of the overages with the Smart Niagara Incentive Plan. So they both came through Planning and Development Committee. So of great concern probably to Councillor Butler and Councillor McDermott, there was one motion that I did move forward that Council approved the retroactive funding request from the Town of Fort Erie of $10,000 in Niagara on the Lake for $3,587 and direct staff to execute the necessary agreements to allow for one-time retroactive funding under the Smart Niagara Incentive Program in the amount of $13,587. That did pass at committee, so I believe it's Brody's Drugs who did a wonderful job with their program. Great incentive package provided by the town and the region jointly. So that retroactive funding was approved. We weren't so lucky with the other overage for the Bridgeburg, but I did lift it and we did move it at Committee of the Whole. So pass that on, Councillor McDermott, to those that that funding directly impacts. And the motion read that staff be directed to prepare and execute the necessary agreements between the region and the Town of Fort Erie and allocate one-time funding of $5,819.26 for identified overages under the Smart Niagara Incentive Program. Big thank you to my colleagues at the region and certainly town staff for providing enough detail that between myself and his worship, we could convince our colleagues that this was a good thing for the downtown district here in Fort Erie. And I have no problem publicly acknowledging my colleagues at the region for not only supporting Fort Erie, but supporting this council and supporting the business district. So that is my regional council's report.
Thank you, Councillor Nunziata. Are there any questions by any members of council? Being none? Oh, I'm sorry. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Councillor Nunziata, thank you on behalf of the Ridgeway BIA and Brody's for that retroactive smart funding. I did want to ask you a couple of questions, though. I understand that there was a motion that was passed to support the movement for a regional airport this past week, last week rather. I'm kind of disappointed in that, but I wanted to find out what the thought process was with respect to those councillors that decided that that would be a good thing for Niagara, considering the amount of money that's going to be attached to that figure. I think they said $2 million. Was that a year or in total, per year?
Yeah. So I'll be more than happy to elaborate on the decision of council. So as you recall, during the 2016 program changes for the 2016 budget, it was the decision of council at that time to invest in certain transportation initiatives. So, for example, the Niagara to GTA Phase 2 study, council directed $350,000 towards that the next phase of the potential Niagara Eastern Corridor. Intermunicipal transit, they dedicated $190,000 towards intermunicipal transit. And part of the overall transportation initiative was to investigate and look at different modes of transportation. And one of them was the Niagara District Airport. So council at the time made a decision to invest $150,000 in the Niagara Airports Review. Now, out of that consultant's report, it was decided to investigate next steps. So the motion that was passed this past week at council was to move the opportunities forward, come back to council with what it would look like in the event that the Niagara region decided to take over those two airports. not the land, but management of those two airports. So we haven't committed to doing that. All we've committed to doing is moving forward to the next steps, directing staff to put together the business case, the business modeling, and the template, and just to see what the opportunities would be for Niagara Regional Council. At the end of the day, if it doesn't make financial sense and the return on the investment is not something that Regional Council is comfortable with, is not something that is aligned with our overall transportation strategy and initiative, then I would suggest that Council would simply pass on that opportunity. But the motion that was passed was not to enter into an agreement now. It was to negotiate the terms, come back to Council with what those terms would look like, what the responsibilities would be between the private sector, between the Niagara region as a whole, and then present that to Council. So again, I understand that certain members wanted to kill it right then and there. But again, Council did commit $150,000 during the budget process to go from A to Z with the review. And when we have all the information, it's at that moment that we will decide whether or not it makes sense for Niagara residents, whether it makes sense for transportation initiatives, whether it makes sense within the overall comprehensive transportation plan.
Maybe I could just put a little bit of context into that. There was a report from staff. The $150,000 was earmarked for a report by staff with respect to the two airports. And the recommendation from the staff was that the region consider entering into an agreement with the Niagara District Airport to fund one half of the cost of its operation, about $650,000 per year. The Transportation Steering Committee, made up of some members of Regional Council, decided to move that rather than assist in financing one airport, the region should take over two airports. So the actual, and that was approved by the Public Works Committee and then subsequently approved by Regional Council Thursday night. The modification to the recommendation, which is that the Regional Council support in principle taking over the two airports and direct staff to enter into detailed negotiations to do just that and report back to council, was that the owners of the airports would be subject to the owners of the airports providing the region with phase two environmental assessments. So I think that there's not as much information that the town, that the regional council is going to receive. Most of the information was provided by the consultants, including whether or not there's a business case or not, and the consultant and the staff made their recommendation. So now it's a matter of whether the environmental assessment will prove positive or negative in where the regional council is left there. And that's what some of the regional councils are hanging their hats on. So that's a little bit more of the context.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, certainly, you know, part of the resolution, and there was a friendly amendment that was made to that resolution that the phase two be completed before there's any transfer of ownership or any kind of agreement is in place. Traditionally, a phase two environmental of a landmass of that size, it's a pretty onerous task. So I don't suspect that the owners would be conducting a phase two until they've actually isolated what the cost would be to conduct the phase two, and in the event that there is something that they find, what the cost of that cleanup is. So again, the process is a long ways away from reaching a conclusion, and again, the condition of having the phase two was a requirement within the motion. So I hope that clarifies some of the timelines.
It does. Thank you to both of you for that input. My reasoning for asking that particular question is that if Regional Council can find its way to dedicate $2 million a year in operating costs for airports, why can't the region then find $2 million to sink into intermunicipal transportation so that there is a more robust regional transportation system that will dedicated to our constituents, and it's not just for a select few. That's where I was going to go with.
All valid points. The comments were made at council that this shouldn't be framed or couched as a this or that scenario. Council is very, very dedicated towards intermunicipal transportation. It has the cooperation of all three mayors of the major transit providers. And Councillor Senzik, Mayor of St. Catharines, spoke very, very passionately about his desire to make sure that there is a true intermunicipal transportation plan for Niagara. Those discussions are ongoing right now. I don't see how investigating what transportation strategy is in place with airports has anything to do with the intermunicipal transportation that all of Regional Council is fully supportive of. So again, if you look at the history of intermunicipal transportation, any monies that have been dedicated, that transit plan will be coming forward. The consultants are, I think it's Dillon Consulting, are almost complete with their discussions with the three municipal transit providers, and council will be getting an overview as far as what intermunicipal transportation will look like for Niagara. And at that particular time, I'm sure there'll be some options on the table as far as what investments we need to make to really make it a valuable service for everyone, specifically for our residents here in Fort Erie, and we'll make those decisions at that time. But I really think it's unfair to couch it as a this or that scenario, or taking money from this initiative to pay for that initiative. If you recall, Regional Council invested $10 million towards GO Transit, and that's only the first step in getting GO Transit down to Niagara on a full-time basis. So again, we've made the initial steps for intermunicipal transit, and when we get that report, it'll provide us a much clearer picture as far as what further investments we have to make, and then it'll be up to council at that time to make those investments.
Yeah, if I may.
Yes.
I'm not trying to say that it's an either-or, or that we're, as you put it, couching it. But what I am saying is that it seems like an awful lot of money to run an airport as opposed to investing directly and immediately into intermunicipal transportation. And in fact, having the region take a look at transportation as a whole and doing it on a regional basis and taking it off of our plate as a municipality. And I feel personally, and I'm not sure if this is correct in saying, but I do feel strongly that Fort Erie, Port Colborne, the smaller municipalities are simply overlooked and not taken seriously enough to say that we're going to make you a strong part and we're going to invest so that we have transportation that is consistent and not sporadic and not only at dedicated times and makes it difficult for those individuals to participate in that transportation system. And that's where I'm going. I just don't think that there is maybe there's lots of discussions. I will grant you that, but I haven't seen that overflow to say, you know, at the town of Fort Erie, we're going to dedicate $1 million towards the outer municipalities, Port Colborne and Fort Erie, so that we can have a more fulsome transportation system. I haven't seen that. I'd like to see that. I think a lot of our constituents would like to see that.
Absolutely. And I'll make that commitment as soon as that report is available, which should be further to the end of this year. I know they're just wrapping up some of their work on bringing those three transit providers together and putting the plan together. As soon as it's available, I'll be more than happy to put it to this council. And I agree 100% with everything you said, Councillor. You have some strong supporters and strong advocates on regional council with respect to intermunicipal transit, like you said, Port Colborne, certainly some of the smaller outlier regions. And I think as a whole in Fort Erie, we do an incredible job. Carla Stout, the rest of town staff do an incredible job with intermunicipal transit to service the greater Fort Erie area. Now, how do we go about making that connectivity with the rest of Niagara and certainly getting our mobile labor force to parts throughout the region? That's a huge, huge initiative that this council undertook at the beginning of the term. And we're committed to making sure that the plan that goes forward recognizes those challenges and those realities.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Worship. And when will that report be in?
I'm going to suggest October, November of this year, yeah. But it's close. But as soon as it's available, Council will get first blush as far as what a true intermunicipal transit initiative strategy looks like. And like I said, those discussions and consultations have been going on now for roughly 8 to 10 months.
Any other councillors? Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through yourself to the regional councillor, just to follow up on my colleague's question in regards to the study that you talked about by, I believe it was Dillon and Associates, have they reached out to any of the smaller municipalities? I mean, if they're putting together a report for intermunicipal transit, if they're only talking to the big three, where's the input coming from the smaller communities?
Well, I probably staff would probably be in a better position to ask whether or not we're dialoguing, but I know through the Transportation Steering Committee, which you and the mayor both sit on, certainly Public Works, which the mayor sits on, Planning and Development, which I sit on, I think there's a lot of agencies and a lot of cooperative efforts. I know the three mayors, being Mayor Senzik in St. Catharines, Mayor Diodati in Niagara Falls, and Mayor Campion in Welland, who are the three major transit providers. I know those conversations haven't always gone well in the past, but my understanding is there is a true sense of collaboration and cooperation for the first time ever. And what they're envisioning is truly an intermunicipal transit strategy initiative, and I, like you, look forward to that consultant's report. But to your question, I'm sure town staff has dialogued with those service providers, certainly Niagara Falls and Welland and St. Catharines, to see how we go about connecting the Fort Erie transit system and the regional transit system between Fort Erie and the rest of Niagara.
Mr. Walsh, can you answer?
My apologies. Can you repeat the question?
Just about the dialogue between
your
staff and the Intermunicipal Transit Working Group.
Absolutely. Through you, Mr. Mayor. We had a meeting a week ago with representatives from Niagara Falls, and essentially we're in a holding pattern until we can see what's coming out of the region's study. Certainly, I think we all believe, as Councillor Butler has stated, that we need to improve transit around here, and we're looking for opportunities, but right now it's a holding pattern.
I might, Your Worship, just a couple comments, and I just want to echo my colleague's sentiment that we're not saying either or. It's nice to know that we see a report where they've committed $2 million to the operation of an airport or a couple of airports, but to know that the region wants to do both is good, but are they going to then commit equally $2 million? Because I think $2 million could go a long way in a lot of the small municipalities. And if that's the plan, hey, I'm all for it. I'll raise my hand right now. Sign me up. But no. To lobby for go and to get airports before fixing our own intermunicipal transit issues seems like we're putting the cart before the horse.
Any other councillors? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to our regional councillor, I just want to circle back to the airport for a second. Any resolution that usually contains the word support in principle means that there's enough there to support in principle. It means we're going to do this. Let's figure out the details. Provide us with the details. I'm wondering, in your words, what is there to continue to pursue this? And I do couch that with a statement that I'm not comfortable with an argument that begins, well, we've already spent $150,000, so we need to keep going down the track. The more you spend, the more reports you receive, the harder it is to say no. So I'm wondering, in your words, Councillor Nunziata, what is it that makes the sense and the case for the region to take over operation of these two airports versus what we're doing now?
Well, it's a great question, and I appreciate the question. But again, a transportation initiative that includes air, land, sea, is certainly can be done concurrently, and that's what we're engaged in right now. We're engaged in concurrent transportation strategies. We're engaged in the intermunicipal transit study that's going to be coming very shortly. That will hopefully connect the Niagara region through a true intermunicipal transit. We're engaged in negotiations just to see what opportunities are available through management of those two airports. And I will say that I do sit on the Scotia Convention Center Board of Directors, and their biggest challenge as far as luring some of the top-notch, some of the high-end conferences and events down to Niagara is certainly the logistics about getting people from Pearson International, from Hamilton to a lesser extent, down to Niagara. And you may scoff at the idea that it's simply airports utilized for tourism, but the tourism sector represents 80,000 jobs, 80,000 real jobs with a whole bunch more spinoff. So again, understanding the transportation needs of Niagara, it's an important part of the puzzle. We're not saying we're going to go down that road. What we're saying is we've invested the money into seeing what the opportunities are. Now it's up to staff to negotiate the terms of what that could look like. If it makes sense, if the return on the investment from a Niagara taxpayer perspective is viable, will it generate economic opportunity? Will it generate tourism opportunities? Is there a bigger end game to expand runways, to provide more service providers at these airports? Same kind of initial steps started with GO Transit. We had initial discussions with GO Transit. It became seasonal GO on weekends, and now you see the fruits of that labor finally coming to fruition. I can see something like this with Niagara District airports, you know, slowly morphing into something bigger than what they are right now. Now, those particular airport operators are hard-pressed to continue service. And the comments around the horseshoe were quite simple. If there isn't a better plan in place to sustain those airports, then they will disappear. And then Niagara is really stuck to how do we go back to finding out what Niagara could look like without having an airport. So again, I think it's important that those two airports provide a valuable service. What the model is going to look like moving forward, that's what council is going to have an opportunity to look at. And at that time, if it makes sense, if it comes with an economic impact study, if it comes with a job creation study, if it comes with real dollars as far as the metrics that are attached to maintaining and operating those particular airports, then I'm sure council will make a very sound and reasonable decision. But again, it's premature to decide anything right now until all that data comes forward. So to your point, negotiate and accept in principle, certainly that's the next step in investigating what something like this would look like. If council is comfortable with the terms and the return on the investment, I'm sure they'll make a sound judgment. If they're not, again, I think they'll make a sound judgment.
Excuse me, I don't wish to be argumentative, Councillor Nunziata, but the report done by the consultants dealt with all these various aspects, and the recommendation was clear that the region should get involved with one airport, not two airports. And so these ideas about a business case, whether there'll be a profit, what have you, that's all been identified. The cost of maintaining the infrastructure, of improving the infrastructure, that's all been identified. So that this isn't really further investigation. This is a clear direction to staff to negotiate the terms of the region taking over the two airports, subject to the now the phase two environmental assessments. So it's not, this isn't a fact-finding mission. All the facts that regional council needed have already been provided by staff. From my reading, from my sitting on the Transportation Steering Committee and sitting on the Public Works Committee and being at the Regional Council. So this is very much, to use a different analogy, a train that's on the tracks moving towards a destination. And but for an unfavorable phase two assessment, I don't think anybody has doubt where this train is going. it's going to the region taking over two airports. Now, we've heard your comments about the region can do them both, and that's fair enough. But if you're in Fort Erie, you're thinking that 7% of the tax levy comes from Fort Erie, which is $140,000. We're talking $2 million. That's $140,000 that we would like put into something that our residents can actually take advantage of, which is intermunicipal transit. So I do appreciate, and I'm sorry, Councillor Becerro, for cutting you off, but I do appreciate your commitment to intermunicipal transit. And when we get there, we're going to be expecting you to be front and center along with the mayor of Fort Erie, banging the drum for intermunicipal transit. Sorry, Councillor Becerro, I just wanted to make sure that it's clear that there isn't a lot more investigation. This is a train that's on the tracks.
And that's my interpretation. If I could cycle back to a comment regarding the tourism-related jobs and the prospect of more jobs, I understand that. The difficulty is we receive phone calls every day from Fort Erie residents who can't get to the jobs they have now. So for them to see the region pumping these types of dollars into an airport initiative, it doesn't really sit well for them. They can't comprehend that because their issue is locally. For them, it's a daily issue. They're not looking at a horizon about taking over airports. That's foreign to them. So to the mayor's comments, I'm hoping that intermunicipal transit comes back front and center because that's what the Fort Erie residents are looking for. I've yet to receive a phone call in 6 years in this chair of someone saying we should be looking at ways to take over the airports, one way or another. It's intermunicipal transit. And to that point, when this information comes back in one form or another, I hope that myself and my colleagues have a robust discussion about this, looking to pass some type of resolution. If this council deemed that this takeover of the airports was not in the best interest of Fort Erie residents, would you uphold that resolution at regional council and vote as council determines here in this chamber?
Well, if you're asking me to commit to a vote before I have all the data, I think it's a little premature. What I have committed to doing is looking at what a negotiation to maintain operations at the two airports would look like and understanding if there is an economic impact, not only for Fort Erie, but for the rest of Niagara, then certainly it's something that we should investigate. So to the mayor's point, yes, the train is on the tracks, but no, it's not at its destination yet. And to your point, intermunicipal transit has never left the radar. It's always been on this council's radar. It will continue to be on this council's radar. And currently, it is on this council's radar. It is the most important issue that this council is dealing with right now. And to suggest that by looking at other modes of transportation and how those modes of transportation can impact Niagara from an economic perspective and from a tourism perspective, I don't think that's the argument we should be making right now. Intermunicipal transit is front and center. It has the highest priority. It has the ears of all regional council. And when that report comes forward, with the recommendations attached to it, then we will make thoughtful decisions as far as how do we go about finally creating a robust transportation strategy in intermunicipal transit that's current and effective, not only for the residents of Fort Erie, but certainly for all of Niagara residents.
Councillor Becerro.
Thank you, Councillor. Through your worship, I understand that, but you and I both know how this works. There's only so many dollars, the taxpayer only has one pocket. And if regional council is pushing this hard on an initiative that could possibly commit taxpayers to $2 million, staff take note of that. I believe regional council has already issued some budget guidelines to various departments, maybe overall, I'm not sure where it is in that process. But staff take that as a marching order. And if they know that this train is going down the tracks to the tune of $2 million, that could impact other decisions from other budgets. So do you see this $2 million as not having any impact whatsoever on being able to leverage additional funds regionally for intermunicipal transit?
Well, to that point, I will suggest that this is a regional council that came in with a 0% budget increase, yet the town of Fort Erie was the recipient of the most infrastructure dollars that it's received probably in the last decade. So is it going to have an impact? I'm sure any commitment of dollars, of taxpayer dollars towards a program or initiative or a policy is going to have an overall impact. But as far as taking away from the priorities of the council, which is a robust transit plan, it's going to cost what it costs. Intermunicipal transit is going to cost what it costs. And I think for too long, the sticker shock of a true intermunicipal transit system has scared away elected officials from making the tough decisions. I can assure you, Councillor, that this council is fully committed to intermunicipal transit, and once the report comes out to see what kind of investment we need to make that a reality, then that's the conversation we'll have, and I'm sure we will have unanimous support as far as putting together a strategy that that recognizes the needs of our mobile labor force here in Fort Erie, of our students here in Fort Erie, and certainly provides that connectivity, not only with the rest of Niagara, but for the GO Transit hubs that we're currently engaged in right now, and with some other transportation initiatives that the region is looking at as a whole. Again, transportation, it can't be piecemealed. It has to work seamlessly together. That's what we're doing right now, whether it's $66,000 for the Port Robinson Ferry, that has zero impact on the residents of Fort Erie, yet it was a council decision to invest $66,000 to make sure the Port Robinson Ferry is still alive and well. Again, these are initiatives that this council has made because we are committed to the idea of transportation in all its forms. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Councillor Nunziata. It does. It answers some. It raises others. I think to your first point, projects like Central Avenue Bridge and Dominion Road have been on the region's books for a long, long time. That's not new money coming forward. And I think the region was of the benefit of some provincial uploading as well. There were a lot of things that happened for the region to be able to attain a 0% budget. To assume that that is going to happen again and in the future, I think is fictitious. It's not going to. The pressures are going to remain. Those opportunities are going to be slim to none to get to that type of budget again in the future. And that's my concern, is that the longer we wait to put something in place for intermunicipal transit, and we keep throwing $2 million commitments for airports front and center, at some point there has to be some choices made. So I'm hoping and believing in what you're saying tonight that we can do it all, and I look forward to that coming to fruition through the budget process. The six of us to your right, and including the mayor, our focus is on what is best for the Fort Erie residents. I appreciate the regional perspective, but we sit here every Monday night on what's best for Fort Erie, and that's where our voices are going to be as these conversations take place. I hope you can appreciate that.
Any other councillors? Councillor McDermott.
Well, I feel pretty much the same on the transit, but that's not what I'm going to talk about tonight. I'll leave that for another day. I just wanted to thank Councillor Nunziata for working his butt off on the CIPs. I know that the two businesses affected at the north end will be very happy about this result. I'd also like to thank Dave Hayworth and Chris Miller, who actually had to really think out of the box on this one. And I think these two guys are our downtown business friends of the week, because they are certainly people that have went the extra mile, and Councillor Nunziata did having to make a second attempt at it. So we really appreciate that type of leadership in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott.
And just to follow up, absolutely, Chris Miller, he's an all-star. Dave Hayworth, certainly everyone in the planning department have worked very, very hard. And my comments to regional council were quite simple. Fort Erie is a very progressive community. We are leaders when it comes to the CIPs and certainly the Smarter Niagara Incentive Program. And what we're looking to do, hopefully, when the region gets around to reevaluating its Smarter Niagara Incentive Program, to look at progressive municipalities like Fort Erie to see what we're doing here, to hopefully they can harmonize their policies with the town of Fort Erie. Because I think that's where the difference was with respect to the overage. The region does it differently than the town of Fort Erie. The town of Fort Erie, it's not that the town of Fort Erie is doing anything wrong. It means they're doing it differently. But that difference is very proactive. It's very progressive. And I think the region could learn a thing or two as far as what Fort Erie is doing.
Thank you very much, Councillor McDermott. And you're right, Councillor Nunziata, it may very well be that what Fort Erie is doing may be something that can be emulated at the region to make it easier for downtown areas across the region. Are there any other councillors that have questions? If not, thank you very much for coming out and descending into the bear pit. Don't, well, not disposal. Did say disposal. Okay, thank you very much. That takes us then to presentations and delegations, and we've had David Gale sitting very patiently awaiting to address us with respect to some stormwater management issues. Good evening, Mr. Gale.
Thank you very much for giving me some time. My name is David Gale, and I live on Bryan Street in Mountain View's Ellesmere Landing development. My property and those of about 16 of my neighbors back onto a stormwater management facility under the jurisdiction and management of the town of Fort Erie. My neighbors have expressed some concerns about the apparent lack of ongoing maintenance of this facility that may impact its future function. We understand there may not be, at this point in time, a town budget line item to cover such long-term maintenance, and we are asking council to establish such a budget to cover the maintenance of this and other stormwater management facilities to ensure their proper function. By way of some background, I spent the majority of my working career in natural resource management with the Ministries of Natural Resources and Environment and three of Ontario's conservation authorities. For the last 21 years before I retired, I was part of the water management team at Conservation Halton, where I specialized in water quality, quantity, and stewardship. Dealing with stormwater management facilities was part of my responsibilities. Stormwater management facilities are designed to be part of the municipality's stormwater treatment system. They are constructed to both hold and treat stormwater during rain events, as we're having tonight. They function to accept and hold excess runoff and treat that water to some degree. The water is held and then gradually released to the system at a rate whereby it can be accepted and not present any threat to adjacent property owners. During the period the water is held, as I'm sure you know, there is sedimentation that takes place, resulting the water being released generally somewhat cleaner than when it first entered those facilities. When we brought our property some 4 years ago, when we moved to Fort Erie, the facility was largely opened. It was within the boundary fences. It was mowed from the water's edge to the fence line on a monthly basis from early spring to late fall. There were a few grasses and sedges along the edge, but essentially it was totally open. We certainly enjoyed the wildlife and waterfowl that we're using and are using the facility to some extent. There is a healthy amphibian population because we don't have an issue with mosquitoes in the area. So, just as an anecdotal note, in late fall 2013, there was a major storm event throughout southern Ontario that resulted in the level of water in the ponds going up almost 3 meters, to the point it was, instead of being probably 12 to 15 meters from the fence line, it was within 2 meters of the fence line. The storm drains in our development, the water in the storm drains was literally right up at the top, basically almost overflowing back into the streets. In some cases, there was major ponding of water in certain areas. But that's the way the system is designed to work. It held the water. It was gradually released. As far as I know, there was no impact on adjacent property owners. A couple of years ago, we were informed that the grass cutting was being restricted to about a 2 meter wide band immediately adjacent to the fence. The rest of the pond was to be left to naturalize. as a wildlife biologist for most of my career, in some ways that's a good thing. I like to see that. But a stormwater management facility is more than just that. It's designed to function to hold a certain volume of water and to release it properly. In the intervening period, we have noticed that the pond has naturalized to a considerable degree. There are now fairly major growth of poplar, willow, and other vegetation within the cells. There is much less open water. And we are concerned, the residents are concerned, that the pond is starting to infill to the degree that the capacity to retain the water may not be as great as what it was originally designed for. And in the future, if we have rain events, this may impact adjacent property owners. Stormwater management facilities are designed with both a capacity and a service life. They need periodic maintenance. That may include having to go in and dredge them out. My experience in other jurisdictions was that often before the facilities were turned over to the local municipality from the developer, a study was done by staff to ensure that the capacity was there, and if it wasn't there, the developer often had to go in and clean the facility out to the extent necessary to ensure its proper function before turning it over. This is particularly important for us in an era of climate change when, as you know, what used to be the 1 in 100 year storm event now sometimes is the 1 in 50, and the 1 in 50 is the 1 in 25, and the 1 in 25 is the 1 in 10, and so on. We are going to see major events probably more frequently. Area residents are simply concerned that if there is not a budget to do this proper ongoing maintenance, that it may impact the ability of these facilities to function as designed. We are asking council and staff to look into this, and if there is not a budget item, to at the time when budgets are being prepared for this year and future years, to establish a budget item, find out what is necessary. I'm sure staff will be able to report on this, to establish an appropriate budget and ensure that this maintenance is ongoing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gale. I can tell you that we did receive an email from staff earlier today indicating that they're looking at allocating some additional money to stormwater management pond maintenance. May not be adequate, but that's something that council can get into when we're into budgets. And there may be some difference in views as to whether the naturalization is good or bad, and for various reasons. But I'm gonna let councilors ask you any questions if they have. Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Gill, first of all, I wanted to thank you for coming here this evening and providing your delegation, because you were providing delegation, as the Mayor had mentioned. We did receive some information from staff today with regard to budget allocation. I'm not certain that the information that was provided is what you're seeking this evening, but I will be asking questions later on in the agenda. For this. I want to point out how informative your delegation was. Mr. Gale actually does live several houses down from me, and through the course of several months, I feel like I've been also provided a greater education regarding the use of storm management ponds. So I do thank you for that. Just a quick question, just to ensure that we're all understanding. It's not necessarily the appearance of the pond that yourself and residents who have also expressed concern to me have. It's more so the function of the pond and the amount of invasive species that the stormwater management pond currently has. Is that fair to say?
That is totally accurate. Frankly, the appearance right now is lovely. I mean, we have this wonderful natural area, you know, right on the other side of the fence sort of thing. But the interesting thing is among the area residents, it's actually become a source of some confusion, because some people think what we're doing is turning it into a natural area, a very admirable goal, but they wouldn't want to see any change to that. They want to see it continue, the trees grow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think that was the original intention of that facility. I think it was put in for the functions I've described, and the naturalization can be a good thing, but on the other hand, if it's affecting its long-term function, that's maybe not such a good thing. And I mean, this is an issue all over Ontario as these facilities become constructed in new development all over. And in some communities, they are seen as an advantage for local homeowners. If your property abuts up, you pay a premium because you have these wonderful ponds and so on, there's wildlife and so on. In many instances, they're open to the public. They're not fenced off. There's paths around them and gardens and that type of thing. So it just depends what the real goal is with these. But in our case, I feel if it's a stormwater management facility, it should be maintained to ensure that we'll function as such now and in the future.
Councillor Zanko, you still have the floor.
That's everything. Thank you.
Any other councillors? Thank you very much, Mr. Gale. That's been very helpful. And as Councillor Zanko said, there will be some questions of staff, and I'm sure that we'll get some further information with respect to this.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That takes us then to the consent agenda. Are there any items that anyone wishes removed from the consent agenda? If not, Councillor Butler, you have the resolution regarding council consent agenda items.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor McDermott, that council approves the consent agenda items as recommended.
Are there any questions or comments with respect to any of the items in the consent agenda, Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Mayor DeCup. Just wanted to bring everyone's attention to the Museum Services minutes of July 19th, specifically having to do with the 100th anniversary of the Point Abano Lighthouse and the request made by the committee. I'll be speaking to that further under new business.
Thank you. And I note that there's been a fair bit of discussion in the Municipal Heritage Standing Committee minutes with respect to 848 Garrison Road. Will we be able to get some background information on that, Councillor Passero, do you think, from the committee?
What would you like to know, Your Worship?
there's a lot of interesting things that are happening there.
Yes.
And it's Dave Hayworth, is it? It's the staff.
Dave Hayworth. We could ask him to circulate a memo.
Memo or something.
The goal of the committee is to maintain that home in its present state, given its historical significance. And we've been working with the current property owners and the estate trustee to find a creative way to ensure that that happens. And a report will be coming forward to council in the near future. Maybe best to wait for that because it will encapsulate all the issues and actually ask for some council direction.
Yeah, okay. That's fair enough. Any other questions? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redicup. Just a couple comments. I was going to ask the same thing on the standing committees, the 100-year anniversary of the lighthouse, but having read over the minutes of the standing committee, I see at the beginning and I'm pretty sure this is a typo error, the meeting started at 10 a.m., and then it adjourned at 11 p.m.
It was a long meeting.
Very thorough.
Yes. So I don't know if what might need to be corrected.
And those are which minutes?
The Museum Services Standing Committee minutes.
Yes. Okay. I'm sure that meant.
Yeah. July 19th.
11:30 a.m.
A.m. Yes. Yeah. I think so.
It's kind of like being at the Region. Okay, are there any other questions? If not, all those in favor of the resolution? None opposed, that is carried. That then takes us to new business inquiries, and we'll start with the resolution that we have relative to the CBIA appointment. Councillor Luberts, you have that resolution?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself and seconded by Councilor McDermott that Council appoints Keith McTagg to the Crystal Beach Business Improvement Area Board of Management for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Any questions or comments on that? All those in favor? And opposed, that is carried. Other inquiries? Councilor Nutt?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Kira Doach, the Acting Director. I just want to give thanks from myself and my constituents to Keegan Jennings, who came out last Friday morning and addressed some of the drainage concerns along West Main Street, Knott Road, for the constituents. He brought a lot of information, was able to accurately show them and walk them actually along the development, exactly where all the catch basins and everything were. Where they're going, and to Keegan and Matt Richardson again with their helpfulness to Ann Hall, the owner of the bookstore in Bridgeburg. She just said that they were very polite and displayed some exemplary customer service. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councilor Nutt. That's very nice to hear and appreciate your comments. Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship, and through you to Mr. Walsh. Just a question with regard to Mr. Gale's delegation and the information that you circulated earlier. I know you had mentioned that you will be submitting a request for consideration during budget time, but that was more pertaining to the grass cutting around the particular pond. I'm just wondering if it would be helpful, and of course if my colleagues would support perhaps a report that would look at our ponds in the area and look at, you know, dredging the pond to ensure that there's no invasive species like the poplar trees. I can tell you that my house is adjacent to that pond as well. Fortunately for me, I know there's an outlet right behind us, and the town has come and cleared the outlet. But within the past summer alone, I know it's been a dry summer, there's been very, very little water, and there's a tremendous amount of poplar trees. And from my understanding, a constituent has also brought to my attention that the outlet on the other side of the storm management pond also has invasive species kind of blocking that outlet. So I'm thinking that, you know, it's not just the area on Bryant. I'm not sure, and I'd like to get your thoughts on the other ponds in the town, and perhaps would it be helpful to get a staff report to see what type of allocation needs to be considered come budget season.
Mr. Zanko, why don't we get a background memo with respect to stormwater management ponds, what they're supposed to accomplish, and address perhaps some of the issues that have been raised by Mr. Gale, because obviously they have a functional purpose,
mm-hmm.
and they can look, as Mr. Gale has indicated, like they're part of a park in some of the large subdivisions that you see in Brampton, Toronto, what have you. But then again, some of them look at naturalizing the areas. I was most impressed with Mr. Gale's comments about the functionality, because as sediment develops, there would be an issue that would affect capacity. And if you've got trees growing up, that may, I would think, as well affect. So how about a memo? Mr. Walsh?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think a memo is appropriate here. If I just may make a couple of comments on Mr. Gale's presentation. First of all, it was very good. One of the better ones we've had in here, so kudos to him. With respect to whatever is growing in the pond, all these ponds, they are an engineered function. They're a stormwater treatment and retention facility. They come with a planting plan, so we can go around and look at the 8 ponds we've assumed right now, make sure they still adhere to what vegetation should or should not be growing in there. With respect to the dredging and sediment buildup, Mr. Gale hit the nail on the head. Prior to the town assuming the ownership of the ponds, the developer is supposed to undertake a final maintenance that will return it to a brand new condition, meeting Ministry of the Environment approval regulations. These ponds come with a Ministry of the Approval certificate of approval. or Ministry of the Environment Certificate of Approval, an MOE C of A, as we call them. So when we get them, they should be at a new state. We can check elevations, and just further to that, in my year and a half as sitting as director, it is one of the things that's come to my attention is that we don't have a management plan for these items, and it's fairly new in the infrastructure world. Ponds have been around for 15 years or so. So that's something we need to improve on. But certainly I can forward a memo to council outlining tasks and approximate costs.
So just, if I might, Councillor Zanko, aside from the memo that you've undertaken to provide us, is there an intention at some point in time for infrastructure services to prepare a report as to how we're going to be able to address long-term maintenance of these ponds?
I don't think a report I envision coming forward, but certainly through the budget process, if there were a significant increase in operating costs to obtain a certain operating level of these, if it gets to a certain point, I think it should come before council's attention so that you at the head of the table are aware of what we're facing.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you. And just one other question for you. One of the areas that Mr. Gale had touched on and a few other residents had asked me is with regard to the poplar trees that are growing in the pond now, and there's many of them. Is that, in your opinion, something that should exist in the storm management plan?
Well, as I noted through you, Mr. Mayor, we'll check the planting plan, and if they're on there, they're an approved species. If they're not on the planting plan, we rip them out.
I think the question is more general in the nature of trees supposed to be there.
Sometimes they are, so I can't really give an answer. And every pond is different.
It would depend on the location as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other councillors? Councillor Butler, then Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. I have a couple of inquiries, and I don't know who to ask this particular question. I have been checking the fencing bylaw, and there is nothing to reflect spite fencing. And that terminology comes up because it's basically when there's no beneficial use by the person that's erecting the fence other than to annoy a neighbor. And there have been a couple of constituents on the lakeshore, in particular one that has requested an investigation into this, because the fencing is now exceeding the 100 line,
of the
100 year
from the floodplain.
Floodplain. So I'm just wondering if we could get a report and see if there's something that we can do to promote or to put into, as an addendum to the bylaw, a provision with respect to spite fencing.
Ms. Dulles, do you have some comments with respect to the type of fencing people put up?
Through you to the councillor. So we are aware of this issue. I have looked a bit into spite fencing. The difficulty with spite fencing is it is subjective. We'd be happy to bring forward a report. However, it's a subjective item. What's obviously beautiful to one isn't necessarily beautiful to another. So it is difficult to regulate. In terms of the one you're speaking of in particular, bylaw enforcement has been out with the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority and determined that it's not within the 1 in 100 year and that everything meets the requirements currently of our fence bylaw except for the high posts, which are going to be dealt with through order. Through an order Keegan's going to issue, hopefully this week.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Acting Director Ms. Dulles. If you could just tell me, is it normal to build fencing with recycled skids?
Dulles.
Through you to the councillor. Oddly enough, there's been quite a bit of development with skids, people trying to construct houses, accessory structures. So it's not abnormal. Obviously, it's a cheap material people are getting for free, and they're using that quite readily in this municipality and in others.
Thank you. So we'll just wait for a report then.
Yes.
Another question, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
On a different topic.
Yes.
For Chief Copeland. It's with respect to the backyard fires, because we know that they're commonplace and they're a lot of fun. However, it's not fun when neighbors are burning plastic bags and hazardous goods and hazardous items. Is there something that you can do to reinforce that that's a no-no in our community?
Chief?
Through you, Your Worship. The current practice is we respond to complaints. So if your neighbor is burning garbage, unapproved materials, basically call 911 and we will deal directly with that individual. As far as education, we do have information up on the town website, on the fire department page, and we do in the spring, and we'll probably do it again now in the fall when the leaves start falling, put a lot of information out on our social media outlets. It's a very complicated subject. If you followed anything that happened in Niagara Falls in the last while, it's very difficult to come to a very reliable, acceptable result for everybody involved. But we'll try to do the social media thing and get the information out.
Mr. Butler?
Thank you, Your Worship. So if somebody has a complaint that somebody is burning illegal substances, they can just call 911 without any problems to them, and you'll come out right away. Just to make sure that's correct.
Through Your Worship, we do respond to these calls. Yes, you can call 911. It's not frowned upon. When the call taker gets some information, they'll realize it's not a structure fire. They're not going to be sending two or three or four trucks screaming to your house. It will be a burning bylaw. Generally, a single vehicle will respond. The other thing it does, if we do have access to historical data, and if we have gone there repeatedly, we will and have charged individuals under the Provincial Offenses Act for illegal burning.
Thank you. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Passero.
Whatever happened to reusing plastic bags as the liners to your winter boots like my mom used to make me do? Until I told her none of the other grade 12 kids had to wear them. I have two, Your Worship. The first is regarding the Point Abenel Lighthouse 100th year anniversary next year. And the museum committee is interested in looking at the logistics of allowing people to climb to the top of the tower. Just to some background to my colleagues, this was an issue that was addressed during the last term of council, and we received quite a lengthy report from fire services regarding all the reasons why we shouldn't. And back then it was couched as a regular occurrence, as something that we should allow visitors to the lighthouse to do. And I didn't support it then. I still don't support it now in that instance. But the committee has come up with an idea that I do support, which is kind of a one-time event. If fire services can work with us to figure out how to do this in a safe manner, basically as a fundraising opportunity. So people would have to apply, would have to come forward, be given a set time, a certain amount of contribution would have to be donated for the privilege of being able to go to the top of the lighthouse. I had the privilege of doing that during my first term of council. It is a spectacular view from up there and something that a lot of people desire to have, but on a regular basis, it's not really achievable just to say that it's a part of the tour. We just don't have that capacity, nor does the fire department have the ability to respond in those types of instances. But I'm looking for the support of my colleagues to at least have a discussion between our committee at museum and the fire chief and other relevant departments to see if this is something that we could take on as a one-time. We have enough time to plan it, make sure that it's done safely, properly, and I think it would be a good fundraising mechanism for the committee, and they'd very much like to do this, and I'm hoping to have the support of my colleagues to at least have these discussions, and we'll bring back a recommendation from staff at a future meeting at some point in the new year.
Certainly nothing to prevent the discussions from taking place, and I've always been skeptical about the blanket prohibition of people climbing up. It is a steep ladder to get to the top, but barring
physical disability or health issues. I don't know why it is prohibited. But certainly there's nothing to prevent your committee from having discussions with the chief and any other staff that might need to be consulted on that. And I think as the chief is cringing over there against the wall, I agree with you. I think that it's a good opportunity to perhaps raise some money and highlight 100th anniversary of a facility in our community. So I would encourage you to continue on, your committee to continue on, unless there's a counselor here that's opposed to it.
Okay. We just wanted to make sure that there was consensus just to at least proceed with the discussions. If there was six hands going up waving no, then we were going to drop it. So if I could continue.
Yes.
If I could ask staff and infrastructure to take a quick scan of the crosswalk pattern over at Peace Bridge Public School. I've been taking my little second cousin Benny to school the last number of mornings, and I just want to have staff's opinion. There is a crosswalk that goes north-south across Torrance that on the north part terminates at just kind of a grassy and gravelly area that I'm wondering if that should not be made a part of the sidewalk and put some concrete in, because I'm wondering how we maintain that come wintertime, because it's not an actual part of the sidewalk. That's a hatched crosswalk. There's another crosswalk that's not hatched that goes east-west across Court Street that terminates on the east side at no sidewalk. And I'm wondering if that crosswalk is even really necessary, given that there is sidewalks on the south side of Torrance all the way along and up into the westerly limit of Court Street. So I'm just hoping that infrastructure could take a look at that and see what we could do to kind of make that a better walking pattern and better flow.
Yep, Mr. Walsh has nodded his agreement, and so they'll look into that and get back to you.
Thank you. Benny will appreciate that.
Well, we want to make sure Benny stays happy.
And if I could, one more note I have here directed through you to Mr. Walsh. I know that there's an upcoming TCC meeting. I'd once again like to either attend or receive an update as to where things stand regarding overall. I believe we were doing an overall transportation study, but my item specifically is looking at any information you have regarding the hill coming up on Queen Street, regarding the line down the center and parking prohibition on possibly the south side to make that a little bit more traversable for cars.
Okay. Are there any other councillors? I had a couple, Mr. Walsh. One of them has to do with the what would you recommend to residents who have a street light that is extinguished and needs to be replaced? Should they be calling the town hall, speak to a customer service representative to make a CRM or whatever they're called?
That's exactly correct, Mr. Mayor. Customer relationship management, CRM. Phone in the town hall, report where it is, as specific as possible. We are compiling we have a deficiency list for our streetlight contractor right now, and they'll be addressing deficiencies very shortly.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Cook, just a question with respect to the Bay Beach Security Agreement. I'm hoping that you might be able to circulate to councillors some information of a general nature with respect to perhaps the number of complaints that the town received with respect to the security, how those were resolved, and what the status of payments to the contractor on the contract that we had with it is, in view of the fact that there were days when no one from the contractor appeared and the town staff had to fill a vacancy. So if you could provide a little bit of background to council, that would be appreciated. Yes, if you could. Any other questions? Councillor Zanko and then Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Worship. I almost forgot in seeing Ms. Stolch sitting behind there. I just wanted to thank Ms. Stolch and her staff. Recently, as we're building the new high school, there has been some issues with some drainage, essentially for Green Acres Drive residents, and Ms. Stolch and her staff have just been really wonderful coordinating with the DSBN, working with residents to find an interim solution. So I do want to thank you for all of your help and for constantly keeping me informed as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I was wondering if Mr. Cook could just tell us when we can expect that signage report.
Mr. Cook, through Your Worship, to the Councillor Butler, I think it was a month ago I apologized for not having that report in front of you, and again, I'm going to apologize. It's now in the hands of IS, but I'm not going to throw them under the bus. I just recently gave it to them to do some updating. What we want to do is add to that to wayfinding signage report is the welcome signage on the highway. Councillor Passero inquired about that a couple of weeks ago, so we're now going to add some information regarding the status of those welcome signs, so we'd like to make that part of the report. So I believe I spoke to Mr. Walsh last week, and he did give me a definite date, but I honestly can't remember. He may be able to remember. I believe it was in October.
Do you remember, Mr. Walsh?
Terrible thing to grow old, Mr. Mayor.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
We're shooting for the October 17th council and committee meeting on that. Just further to that, our manager of engineering, George Stojanovic, attended a meeting. Did Millsy go to that? With a member of Planning and Development Services. At the region with respect to local signage on regional roads in general. So we are waiting for that meeting to occur. We'll update the report and bring it forward, as I said, on the 17th. And if I just may, regarding Councillor Passero's request, the next traffic coordinating committee is scheduled for October 13th, and the Queen Street issue is on the agenda.
Ms. Babanco, I wonder if you could provide the response to an inquiry that was made by Councillor Passero at our last meeting.
Certainly, Your Worship. The response to inquiry by Councillor Passero, who asked if there could be a change to the business license application form to incorporate a relocation inspection fee for an existing business. That would be less than the $141 fee for a new business. The reason for the process of issuing a new business license for a relocated business with the same fee of $141 was provided verbally at a past meeting of council, but to reiterate, the same inspections that are required for a new business are also required for the new location of an existing business. Inspections are required by the fire, planning, and building departments, and depending on the type of business, also the public health department. The fee established is approached with a view to cost recovery for the administrative and inspection work. Administration includes coordination of the required inspections to ensure completion before issuing the license. As outlined in the Business Licensing Bylaw number 21705, the Planning Department ensures compliance with the official plan and zoning bylaw for the proposed use at that location. The Building Department ensures compliance with the Building Code and Property Standards Bylaw, and the Fire Department ensures compliance with the Fire Code. Examples of the purpose of this staff work include checking permitted uses, determining whether a site plan is required, ensuring sufficient parking, addressing capacity levels, ensuring the building is adequate for the intended use and is structurally safe, determining whether any desired work requires permits, ensuring fire separation between buildings, means of egress, which is exits, and sufficient fire extinguishers. All inspections ensure the safety of the business owners, patrons, and other members of the public within the town of Fort Erie. With respect to cost recovery, the inspections alone could average a cost of $300 based on wages and depending on the complexity of the inspections and staff time required. In consideration of all of the above, it would not be recommended to reduce this business license fee or remove any related requirements. However, if Council did choose to change any business license fees, a change to the fees and charges bylaw would be necessary with the required rationale submitted for that change.
Thank you, Ms. Babanco. That takes us to motions, of which there are none. Are there any notices of motion? There being none, that takes us to consideration of bylaws. And Councillor McDermott, you have the resolution in that regard.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Butler, that bylaw number 108-2016 to confirm the actions of Council at its meeting held on September 26, 2016 is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. Councillor Passero, you have the third and final reading for that bylaw.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, the bylaw number 108-2016 is given third and final reading to be signed by the Mayor and Clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That takes us to scheduling of meetings. Are there any meetings anyone wishes to announce? Councillor Passero.
Thank you. Accessibility Advisory Committee is meeting tomorrow, 4:30 p.m. in Committee Room Number 1.
Thank you. Any others? If not, Councillor Nutt, we will go to you for the ceremonial closing of the Council.
Thank you very much, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, the Council adjourns at 7:20 p.m. to reconvene in a regular meeting of Council on October 11, 2016.
All those in favor? Not paying attention? That is carried.